Hi, this is Mark, and welcome to the Candle Shore Podcast. This is show number 29. In today's episode, I interview Ms. Roselle Ambubiog, product manager for Code Factory, the makers of Mobile Speak for pocket PCs and smartphones. Special thanks to Roselle for being with us today, and I thank you for listening.
Hello, everybody. All right, enjoy. Well, we're here talking to Roselle. And Roselle, how do you say your name? Ambubiog?
Ambubuyog.
Oh, my. I'll just,
just call me Roselle.
Yeah, I just call you Roselle, exactly. And we're talking to Roselle. I'm in California, and she's in the Philippines. And so we're doing this via Skype. So if you hear some background noise or hissing, we apologize. It couldn't be helped. Now, Roselle is the support manager?
Product manager, and also I also take care of support. Well, actually, my primary role in Code Factory is to take care of defining the roadmap for Windows Mobile products. I'm the product manager for the Windows Mobile division. So that includes conceptualizing the specifications and features of products, coordinating with developers on how to implement them, what are the available resources, how much time it will take, how much resources it will take, and then all the way to scheduling the releases. And then I also have post-launch activities like talking to users, getting their feedback, keeping an eye on product performance, competitors, and also market trends.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And then I also play the role of support and knowledge manager. So I take care of product documentation, web content, and escalated support queries. That means, you know, if dealers, if our partners have questions, they escalate it to Code Factory if they need assistance, and that falls on my plate as well.
Mobile Speak is Code Factory's flagship product that allows screen and magnification and braille access to mobile smartphones, be it on a Windows or a Symbian platform. So we'll talk a little bit about Roselle. Can you tell us how you came to the company? And I didn't know this until I received an email from you. Is that are you low vision or totally blind?
Totally blind.
Totally blind. I had no idea. So, if you, it'd be great if you could tell us just a little bit how you came to the company. And
I've been totally blind since age 6. Then I started using access technology in 1993. So that's been 15 years now. So I'm already familiar with access technology products available at the time when I graduated from college. And then I was on this mailing list, posting, helping out people, answering questions about technology in general. And then this person who was vice president of the software engineering department in Code Factory, Chris Hofstetter, saw me, wrote to me, and said, I seem to remember reading about you, like, when you graduated in the Philippines, blah, blah, because I graduated, you know, with a BS math degree. So that sort of got some media attention, blah, blah.
Yeah, that got my attention. That would get my attention, too, believe me. I get it, especially in the film. Yeah, my attention.
And so he says, well, Freedom Scientific has this, is thinking of getting into this math-related project. We need somebody to help us design the specs, the features, blah, blah. So, you know, he said, if I'm interested to work as a contractor, and that's how I first got into the AT industry. So that was in 2004, and then after that stint, during that time I got introduced to different people from other companies, including Edward, the CEO of Code Factory.
Absolutely.
So in 2006, he contacted me and said, "Well, would you like to work for me? You know, as product manager, and also support manager." And I said, yeah, because I've already heard of Code Factory. I know of Code Factory back then as a new player, but what really interested me about them is they seem to be getting into stuff that weren't following tradition as it is, because they were making screen readers that will work on mainstream hardware. That were also portable, because usually when you say mainstream, that's PC screen readers and stuff like that, but not yet at that time, not yet the mobile ones that are that you can buy from any store. And then at the same time, they weren't really the sort who would go into just approaching agencies, selling to them, and getting them interested, but they would actually market directly to the users. And that seemed to be a priority for them.
Yes.
So I said, hey, this is a really interesting company. It'll be great to work with them. And so I agreed.
What screen access or access technology do you use in your daily life?
I'm a PC user, and I use JAWS as well as System Access.
Okay.
So I switch between the two. And then I also use Braille. I have Braille devices from Optilec. I'm an avid Braille user.
Yeah, so as am I. So okay. what do you use for your note taker? I mean, do you have a PacMate or do you use something?
Well, I started when I was in college. I got a Braille and Speak 2000 that was still with Blaze Engineering then.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
And then after that, I got a Braille Note, followed by when I was working for Freedom Scientific, a PacMate QX and a PacMate VX.
Okay.
And then, but now what I'm really using is. Well, if I need to do lots of computer work and I'm on the move, then I would bring my laptop with me as well as my PDA so I can sync my PDA phone so that I can synchronize data and, you know, I can shut down the laptop if I want to
during
a meeting, just refer to my PDA. Or if I don't have to do much computer work, I just bring with me either my Symbian phone or my Windows Mobile smartphone.
So you actually use two phones?
Yeah, I actually have two numbers, so it really depends more on the number, not on the phone, which I would bring with me.
All right, well, now, I got to follow this up. Which mm-hmm. Which Symbian phone do you use, and which smartphone or Windows phone do you use?
Okay, for Symbian, I have a Nokia N73, which is a Symbian 9 phone, one of the first models that came out for this new version of the Symbian operating system. And then I have a Samsung SGHI 320 Windows Mobile smartphone.
The difference between the smartphone versus the PDA phone, because I know that when I was in the market before Christmas, this past Christmas, I had no idea that depending on which mobile device I purchased, on the Windows side, both being phones, it would depend on which version of mobile speak I purchased. So. Can you explain that to us, and I'd appreciate it.
Okay. Well, we're talking about like two operating systems, but there are really three types of phones that we support. There's the Symbian Series 60 phone, there's the Windows Mobile smartphone, and the Windows Mobile Pocket PC phone. Yes. So let's try to differentiate the two different operating systems, just Symbian and Windows Mobile.
Okay.
And in this case, the Symbian phone is more similar to the WM smartphone because of the form factor and the hardware interface. That means, you know, with Pocket PC phones, you have a touchscreen, and optionally you can have a keyboard there, but it's not really something that you will find on all Pocket PC phones.
But they will all have touchscreen. That's interesting to note. Okay,
yeah,
I didn't
they
know
all
that.
Have touchscreen.
All right.
But for Symbian and Windows Mobile, they're designed for even for one-handed operation and using keys to access, you know, the screen, the menus or the interface itself.
Right. Okay.
So let's start by comparing the, you know, there's really some people ask which is better, Symbian phone or Windows Mobile smartphone. There's really no good answer to that. Not a satisfactory one.
Okay.
Because it really depends on your user preference. That's why we really stress, you know, to people who ask this question, like, you have to research on your own, get information from other users, read reviews on the internet, because that's really important. For example, some people would ask, okay, I want to be able to have easy synchronization between my phone and the computer.
Right.
Then in this case, you may find the Windows Mobile platform better because Active Sync, you know, it's really designed. Windows Mobile is just a slim down version.
Windows working with Windows, right? Windows working with Windows. Yeah,
so it works. It works well easier. But there are ways to do it as well to do data synchronization with a Symbian phone.
Right.
It's just that, you know, you have to probably install extra software or try to learn other functions, get a different application, etc.
Understood.
You know, unlike with Windows Mobile, you have Active Sync or Windows Mobile Device Center on a Vista machine.
Right. Okay.
And then people would ask, well, what about ease of use? You know, the software interface itself. Again, that really depends. Like, for example, and I usually use this as to illustrate the difference. You and I know about softkeys, but for those who are listening and are not familiar with it, they're like menu or option keys. There's a left softkey and a right softkey. And the assignment of these keys will vary from one application to another. Like if you're in a list of things that you can delete, you can have the left softkey to open and then the right softkey for menu, or you can have yes or no assigned to the left and right softkey respectively. It really depends, and it changes. The screen reader will reread it, so there's no difference there. Now, the difference is with Symbian, they seem to have the assignment of softkeys to be more consistent. Like, for example, the left softkey is for opening things, starting things, for answering yes, and as well as offering the options of an application. And the right softkey is always for canceling, saying no, exiting the application, closing the window, etc.
It seems like it's a little bit more like in the old days before Windows smartphones, when the keys were more dedicated to one function or another, regardless of where you were inside the system.
Exactly. So, you know, for some people, they find that easier to remember. Now, for Windows mobile smartphones and Windows mobile pocket PC phones as well, you usually have yes and no to the left and right softkey. But then sometimes the menu options will be on the right soft key, while the cancel or the back or the exit option is on the left. Sometimes even though yes and no would be left and right when answering prompts, for screens where you have a succession of steps, you have next to the assigned to the right, but back assigned to the left. You know, it's not that consistent throughout the software interface. Now, is this a disadvantage? Well, to some they say, oh, it's hard for me. I have to listen, you know, to what the softkey assignments are. But to other people, you know, it just takes a bit of getting used to, and then they'll be fine. And they see other advantages to it. For example, with Symbian, when you delete a message, when you cancel a message that you're composing, you would be asked, would you like to delete or save it to draft? And the options will be displayed in a screen. You arrow up and down, and then, you know, you have left softkey for select, right softkey for cancel.
Right, okay.
So that's how you do it. You arrow down to delete and then press the left softkey.
Okay.
But for Windows mobile smartphones, for example, you have, you know, you delete and you cancel the message, and then you're asked, would you like to save it to draft? And then you have yes and no. You don't have to select. So obviously, when you say yes, you save it to draft. When you say no, it gets deleted.
Right.
So
some people feel
that that's more intuitive.
Yeah.
And again, that's based on user preference. But when it comes to functionality, it's almost the same. I would even say very, very similar. Like, all the applications are there, especially now that Windows Mobile 6 smartphones have Office Mobile.
Right.
For document reading. Before that was something that made them different, because Pocket PC phones have always had Office Mobile, and Symbian phones, starting with I believe Symbian 8, if I'm not mistaken, had Quick Office. There are some differences in messaging, but they're in the personal information management applications like calendar, tasks, blah blah. But that's very minimal.
Yeah, no, usually people ask me, they say, well, which phone should I get? I say, well, whoever your best friend is, look at what he's got. What about this GPS feature? I mean, we Windows Mobile users have been looking forward to this. Now, I'm a Trekker user from Humanware, you know, the Maestro Trekker user.
Yes.
So, you know, it would be, it's a fine product, but I would love to have such a similar, something close to it on my phone. What can you tell us about the upcoming GPS solution?
To be honest with you, we haven't even mentioned the name yet of the product. So this is the first time that people will hear the product's name and even the list of features. If you want to,
yeah, I wish I'd known. I would have had a drum roll set up for you. I didn't know. Okay,
first heard on Candle Shore Podcast.
Go ahead.
Okay, the product is called Mobile Geo. So that's Geo and GEO.
Okay, Mobile Geo, got it. Yeah.
And then it will be initially launched for Windows Mobile devices, and that includes Pocket PC phones and PDAs, as well as Windows Mobile smartphones.
Okay, all right.
And then it will work with we intend to make it work with external and internal GPS receivers.
Uh-huh.
So people would have a choice. Even if, let's say, you have a Samsung BlackCheck 2 that has an internal GPS receiver,
right.
If you decide that I want a better external GPS receiver, you can buy one, you can still use that.
That's
so you,
great.
You have that option. Yeah. And it will have maps for, I suppose I can announce that this now. Well, people do have to understand that since the product is still in alpha phase and soon in beta phase, the things I'm going to mention here with regards to its features are not yet set in stone.
Got it.
So what will be the case is this will all happen sooner or later. It's just that I can't guarantee that they'll all be in the first version. We hope
Understood.
So. That's our intention.
That's very fair.
So
that's very fair.
It will have maps for the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, Ireland, Spain, Italy, France, Germany, Austria, Australia, South Africa, Norway, Sweden, the Netherlands, Denmark, and the Singapore, Malaysia, and Hong Kong region. We are working on this product in collaboration with the Sendero Group,
okay,
which has
right.
a long and really good experience with designing GPS products for the blind and visually impaired. So we really feel great about this collaboration and the product because GPS navigation is one of the top requested things
that
we keep getting in the past probably 2 years. And they've been asked, when is it going to happen? You know, I want to be able to use it with my mainstream mobile device.
Right.
You know, and the nice thing about this, it will work with MSP and MSS. And so, you know, how it is with MSP and MSS, you can use it on a phone, and then if you want to upgrade to a new one, you can now, with user-centered licensing, you can now transfer that. Yeah. So you have the freedom to use this device on a wide range of mainstream hardware. You know, you're not going to be limited with just one or two models, for example.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and then what can I tell you about the features? Well, obviously, GPS solutions will provide navigation information, so you can create routes. We have two GPS modes. We're calling them Scout mode and the Voyager mode.
Okay.
And then the Scout mode is where you can set a route and then use the maps, the GPS maps, to scout or to virtually explore that route, so that you can plan how to take that route.
Okay.
And then you have the Voyager mode where you have GPS tracking, actual GPS tracking. And then you can set, you know, your current location, you can select an address or whatever to be the point of origin or the point of destination, then it will automatically calculate the route. While you're traveling, you can get information about, well, first of all, when you start the application, it will already give you information about your current location, about, you know, a number of satellites being tracked, how good is your GPS signal in this place. While you're moving, it will give you a compass direction where you're moving towards,
right. okay.
the speed, you know, the heading towards the nearest point of interest, blah, blah. And then while you're traveling a particular route that you've calculated, it will give you the upcoming maneuvers like turns, intersections, the nearest point of interest, which means, you know, on GPS maps you have like places where it could be a certain restaurant, a certain school, or a certain bridge, and then it will give you the orientation and the direction and the distance to that. If you want, you can check your current location anytime as well. And then when you, for example, when you reach a certain point in the route where you can change your location, you
yes.
can, or you can stop there, let's say an intersection, you can get details about that. What are the cross streets of that intersection, for example? You know, and then there are other things, like you can save routes, you can load them, you can reverse them so that, let's say, you move from a point of origin to the destination, you don't have to recalculate the way back, the route back from the destination to the point of origin if you need to go home, for
okay.
example. You can just reverse it, and it will give you the directions as well. It will provide information, and this is an important thing that people keep asking us, if you support a mainstream application, GPS application, the real concern is, will it have route information for pedestrians, you know, because most blind people
Right, that's exactly right.
Travel.
Right, pedestrian or motorized, right.
So we can provide routes for pedestrians or for motorists. You'll be able to download the maps and select which ones you want to save. When you purchase Mobile Geo, a license for Mobile Geo, it will automatically, the price that you pay already includes the maps for your home country.
Understood.
Not your region, but your home country. So mm-hmm. if you're in the United States, you have the maps for the entire United States.
Will they fit on, okay. on one card, or do you have to,
okay.
you know?
Okay, now that's the thing. It's a really, really big,
yeah, I know.
big country and a big, you know.
Yeah, no, I got it.
It has lots of map files. So what we're going to do is you have the option to store just on your device, just regions.
Approximately, mm-hmm. can you ballpark what the price may be, or is that way too soon in the future?
Too soon in the future.
Okay, all right, that's okay.
Yeah, but it will be announced as soon as, you know, we have the fully functioning product and we're ready to launch it.
I know that so a lot of people, I know that some of us, you know, would certainly be interested in doing beta testing. Is there an email address for that, or is there some kind mm-hmm. of contact that people who want to sign up, who own a Blackjack 2, by the way, who may want to get involved in the testing?
we'll be publishing an announcement inviting people who are interested to beta test, because beta testing for this product will be very important for us. So I suggest people who are on the mailing list, just keep an eye out for the announcement, or for those who aren't on the mailing list, or aren't regularly checking that list, you can sign up to any of our Stay Tuned services that can send you updates via SMS, email, and, you know, even the newsletters.
Let me ask you that. Oh, but for people who are wondering why I don't ask, Roselle and I agreed with the RSS application that we've all heard about. We're going to have another interview. You said there's a gentleman that's in charge of the RSS project?
The Daisy Reader, you mean?
Yeah, the Daisy Reader. What did I say, RSS? I meant Daisy. Yeah, you're right. Daisy Reader, forgive me.
That's okay.
Yeah, we'll discuss
yeah,
that.
That's actually, Mobile Geo was first launched for Windows Mobile. On the other hand, Mobile Daisy. Our Daisy player
right.
was launched first for the Symbian product.
Right.
So, yeah, it will be great if you can have an interview with Greg Gladman. He's our chief technical officer and also the lead developer for our Symbian product.
Okay, we'll do that. I didn't want people thinking I was remiss and not asking her. Why didn't you ask about the Daisy
yeah.
Reader?
Oh, but for people who are interested, we will also have Mobile Daisy for our Windows Mobile products.
The difference between IE and Opera, it's very funny. I was looking on the mm-hmm. web yesterday in preparation for this. And I came across a website that said, if you want the best browsing experience on the web, you know, go with Opera, which has never been my experience. So, I mean, I know that there are people who are having positive experiences with it. However, mm-hmm. from what we've seen on the list, that doesn't be the case. Doesn't seem to be the case. What's going on with which phones are the IE versus Opera? Any opinions, comments, mm-hmm. anything you could tell us would
okay.
appreciate.
Well, some people would find that Opera does provide, you know, maybe stability or more functionality for IE. But again, this is more a matter of preference, really.
Okay.
The thing with IE is IE Mobile is, again, like similar to the Internet Explorer that you have on your Windows desktop, for example. Now, when it comes to accessibility, when it comes to supporting it, Code Factory, and I can only speak for Code Factory, obviously,
right.
is focusing mainly on supporting and enhancing the support for IE Mobile, because this is already built into Windows Mobile devices,
okay.
as opposed to Opera, where, you know, sometimes it could be added by the manufacturer, by the carrier, or whoever rebranded the device,
okay.
and mm-hmm. it could also be installed by the user. Apart from that, whenever there is an update to Windows Mobile, that involves updates to IE, it's already part of our development cycle that we're going to support any changes. With Opera, if they come up with new updates, you know, it sometimes happens while we're just about to finish the release schedule. You know, it's hard to tell.
Agreed, yeah.
Hard to plan for support. Now, we also believe that, you know, with IE, IE Mobile, though it's not really designed specifically for the use of blind people, we do have, you know, tools that we can use to make it accessible. And we can also contract Microsoft Which has its own accessibility group, and you know, Microsoft has been very helpful. I'm not saying this isn't going to happen. This is going to be the case with Opera developers, but because they're not really they haven't really designed the application for screen reader users. You know, we have to go through the process of contacting them, saying, you know, okay, you're using this control, it's not accessible.
No, I understand. So you already have a relationship with Microsoft. Where you say you have a relationship with Microsoft, and they're already very aware of the needs of the people with physical challenges. Let's just say that.
Yes.
Because they don't just cover blind people, but a whole range of disabilities.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So that's important. I understand. So would you suggest then, generally speaking, if a person buys a phone with Opera, which I think some of the cues do come with, that you recommend that they get IE?
Well, IE should still be there, I believe, although it won't be set as their default browser.
Oh, okay, so it does come on the... I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, set it as the default browser. Mm-hmm.
We've had some recent questions about people who want to, look at the serial numbers and things on the phone. Obviously, for the GSM users, it's a pretty simple command. For the CDMA users, sometimes it doesn't appear to be that simple. although I've tried to get some information for people on the list. Maybe you've seen that.
Yes.
What I was noticing is I know that, and I haven't activated my product in a while, but I do remember that you guys save that information on your servers. When I go to the remote activation with it, I remember seeing my serial number on the
device ID. Exactly.
Right. Is there a way that a person can use mobile, the software to, is there a way to do that, to review the information?
Actually, when you run the remote activation wizard or the activation manager in the control panel of MobileSpeak Pocket or MobileSpeak smartphone, it will show you the details it has gathered and will be sending to the server. And one of these is the IMEI.
I know, IMEI or MEID or ASN or UPS or GOP. I know. It's just ridiculous.
Or ESN.
ESPN, call it whatever you want, right?
And we call that, usually it's shown as the device ID number one. We also have another device ID number that we also collect from the device just to make sure that we can... that our server can uniquely identify the device as belonging to the owner of the user ID.
Okay, so give me that again. I'll make sure I understand what you're saying. You're saying that on the phone, I can go into the, not on the computer, but on the phone, I can go into the control panel for MobileSpeak. How do I get to this information?
Okay, you go into Activation Manager, and then you select, let's say, Activate Device. Pretend that you're going to activate the device. This is on the phone. On the phone, exactly,
okay.
Yeah. Right. And then, it's up to you. It will ask if you have a user ID, yes or no. Either option will be fine.
Okay.
Because what you're trying to do is not really to activate, but to just get to the screen where device information has been collected and it's showing the information.
Exactly.
And one of them is the number that you want, the serial number of the phone. Now, this is the thing. With GSM phones, it's pretty straightforward. You have, the IMEI number, and that's also what we're collecting. You can also get that by dialing *#06.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
But with CDMA...
Yeah, but it's, I know.
There is the ESN number that's displayed also in the about information or the system information under settings. Okay, and that's also what we're displaying. We're also getting that from the registry. But it turns out that some phones, and that's really the ESN number as well. But there are some carriers, CDMA carriers, where they would ask you for another type of ESN with, I think, two extra digits. I can't remember exactly.
Okay.
In order to program the phone, and that is only available. It's readily available on a label. Stuck to the battery, and that's what they'll tell you to do. Look at this, blah blah. Now there is a way to find out this information from the phone. And it's not easy to get. It's not really something that we can find on all registry in the same place in the registry, for example.
Okay.
So what a person has to do is to find or to ask the carrier what is the key combination to press. you know, just like you have star hash 06 hash on a GSM phone, there is some, also a key combination that you can press for a CDMA phone. But that, again, differs from one carrier to another.
It must, because when I was in the Verizon store the other day, again, on behalf of the list to try to get some, and they looked at me like, well, what? I said, there must be a command that they were telling me, you know, take out the battery and look. And I was talking to the store manager, and he had to go to his computer. He got this look on his face like, I
remember seeing this web page, which has, or I probably was told about it. It has the codes, the key combinations or key presses to get the ESN and other information as well, or to set to program the phone for certain functions. And they have this web page, but it works for Sprint users. And then I read that if somebody in subscribed to TLIS in Canada uses it, then that will also work. But it's a bit different for Verizon phone users, I believe.
Yeah.
I think there's a different widget or something.
Well,
like that.
Yeah, you know, we'll do the best we can, but at least we know that you can go into you get some access to this information when you go into the mobile speak control panel.
Exactly.
Which I was not aware of, but I figured it had to be there somewhere. Let me ask you this about the upcoming versions of mobile speak. One of the things I think for me kind of difficult to get used to, but now that I've gotten used to it, I absolutely love it, is the different modes in the interface, which is like the home, press the home key, plus I think it's 5, which toggles from default.
Command layout.
Command layouts. Now that I've gotten used to it, I just can't imagine not doing it. Are you going to add more features or more command layouts when you start adding more?
Well, this is actually new to version 2.0 of MobileSpeak smartphone. For the previous three versions, we had problems just figuring out how to come up with key combinations that we could use for commands. We were running out of them.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of like the area codes in the United States. Right, understood. Yeah.
So we had to make a change in the command structure so that it would be more flexible. And that's what you have now, the command layouts. And people don't have to memorize all of them. As you know, like for settings, you can just go into the control panel, set everything, and you can forget about it, right?
Right, yes, absolutely.
So you don't have to memorize the commands in the settings layout. But for the default layout, you have the most important stuff there now. And you'll probably notice that there are some key combinations that have not yet been assigned to commands. And that should give you an idea that we actually do have plans of adding more commands to OVFCs.
No, that's good, yeah. Yeah, that's very good. It's interesting about the review cursor that you have. I've always wanted, and this is going to throw my own two cents in. It might be nice if I always feel like when I go into review cursor, I press the home 3. I'd like to be able to keep it in that mode. It seems like whenever I press another key, it comes right out. I'm sure there's a technical reason. In JAWS, for JAWS users, when you go to the JAWS cursor, you can stay in that JAWS cursor until, you know, whenever you want, but. Anyway, I just thought I'd put that. I feel like I have no. I'm always afraid to touch a key because I'll pop right out of that review mode. But anyway, it's still interesting. I mean, it's a very good thing.
Actually, you should get out of it when you press home key. But
exactly. I mean, I'd like for it not to come out of it when I press home. You know,
so
I
that you can perform other commands.
Yeah, exactly.
Well. Yeah.
And not lose my place. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
We'll actually have that because for Pocket PC, for MobileSpeak Pocket, there's also a review cursor, and you can opt to press the same key combination to exit as well as, you know, to enter. So we could do that so that we can add extra functions. And we will actually because, well, for people who have been using MobileSpeak Pocket, they would know that, for example, in Review Cursor, you have commands to label graphics and to find out font information.
Wow.
That's not yet available for MSS, and we plan to add, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, add it. Let's bring it on. That's what I want. That's wonderful. I didn't know you could do all that stuff. Gee, I'm going to have to rethink this thing. Anyway, all right, now, I got to tell you, now here comes the hard question, probably the hardest question of all of them.
Okay.
I got to tell you that a lot of us have not been very pleased with that. Tell me, that's not enough to put you on the defensive. To be pleased with the response we get when people send in support emails or send in your forms. In fact, we had some complaints. I don't know how closely you monitor the list, but a lot of us feel kind of sometimes, I would say, abandoned once they buy the product. And, you know, you send a message to Code Factory, and there's not even an acknowledgement that you received it. And I've always found that. Can you address that for us? And
Okay.
You know, because I think a lot of people, especially new users, feel like, well, I've paid this money, and now, you know, I know that Edwin and I talked, and he's like, well, you know, we have our support, the vendors, but a lot of the vendors, believe it or not, may not have the answers, and I think people still feel like, you know, they want to go to you.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Yeah.
No, okay. The thing is, well, first I have to explain why I believe Edward mentioned it as well, that when you purchase Code Factory products, sometimes you will get, well, not sometimes, but we really advise or suggest that people go to their distributors to ask their questions, and then if they need assistance, either they will be redirected by the distributors, or they can go to Code Factory directly. Okay, now let me explain that position, because most of the questions that we usually get from new users would be about installation, about activation. Sometimes they would say, okay, I've already got a user ID. Apparently they got the user ID linked with a license for, let's say, the Phonics voice, but then they installed an acapella voice, and then they tried to activate it, and they said it's not working. You know, things like that. It would be quicker if they go to the dealer and ask them, because, let's say, there's a problem with installation. The dealer could walk them through over the phone. They can go through the steps of the installation process. If it's an activation problem, they can check their records and say, oh, this is the reason why it doesn't work, etc. Now, that doesn't mean, though, that people are limited to ask to get support only from dealers. You know, we're not telling people, okay, you bought it from this dealer, get the support from them, and don't bother us.
Yeah, because that's how it feels,
Code Factory policy.
Yeah, I know, but I'll tell you something. That's how it feels, because I know personally, when I first got started, I did ask my vendors, and they were great people, but they said deal with the company. I sent emails to the company, and I didn't get except one reply of all the other issues I had. You know, I'm just saying, it does feel like, you know, you bought it from them, you're their problem, kind of. That's how it feels sometimes. I think a lot of us
I'm sorry to hear. I'm sorry to hear about that experience. Okay, but this is what I'm explaining is the position of Code Factory. We don't have such a policy where, you know, buy it from the dealer, get the support from the dealer, but don't bother us. That's never been how it works with Code Factory. We value customer support and making sure that our customers have the great user experience. Now, there are times, and I've been noticing this, and we're trying to find solutions for this. Sometimes people say they send emails that don't reach us, or sometimes we've already replied to the emails, and it doesn't reach people.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's one of our big concerns. That's why one of the things that we've done is we have the support request form online, and that will at least guarantee that we will get the emails, because it's being submitted from our website to our support email account.
Okay.
Now, the thing is how to solve, and people when they fill out that form should get an automatic response to confirm
to their email or just the result page
to their email
okay.
to confirm that the request has been received by Code Factory. If they don't get that, then that's a clear sign that their email account is not getting messages from the codefactory.es domain.
Okay.
Now, in that case, now what would you do? If you write to support at codefactory.es, it'll probably be the same case. You won't get our replies. Now, what we've done now is to create a Gmail account. And this is just recent. We're about to add the information on our web pages for it.
Okay.
And it's support.codefactory@gmail.com. Codefactory
Gmail.
Written,
okay.
You know, as
okay.
one word.
That's good to know. Okay.
So hopefully we can, you know, people can write to that if they haven't heard from us and just write. And I want people to know that, you know, if you don't get sometimes people say, oh, I wrote to them, they didn't reply, so I didn't bother. Don't give up on us.
Okay.
I mean, just keep on writing. You're welcome to pester us all the time. You can write to us on Gmail address. You can use the support request form. And if this is another thing that you could do. You could contact your dealer. If the dealer doesn't know the answer, you can ask them, could you please contact Code Factory because I can't get in touch with them or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And give them your contact information. We'll be happy to give you a call and help you out with your questions. Another thing that we strongly recommend is for people to join the mailing list. And this isn't because we want to, you know, be rid of the responsibility to deal with your support piece. You're free to ask us your questions anytime. Now, the advantage, though, of having of being subscribed to the mailing list is that sometimes your questions can easily be answered by users of the same phone, like with greater experience. And we find that, you know, we think that's a great resource of help as well. And we're very grateful to the people on the mailing list because, you know, like people like you who take time to like document the steps and post in your blog. That's really great. And we want to create the sense of community among our users as well. So that, you know, this isn't just great for support, but also for just providing feedback, even to Code Factory on how else we can improve our products and our support services. And then, one thing that I can mention now that we're working on is that we have this online knowledge base where we will.
Yeah, Edwin mentioned that to us. Yeah, I remember
mm-hmm.
that. That's supposed to be really, that's going to be coming online shortly.
Yes, yeah, it will be, actually, people can visit it now, but, you know, we're still building up the entries, but, I can describe to you what it's about. It will have different modules for all our products, and then, you know, it will be categorized as Symbian, Windows Mobile Smartphones, and Pocket PC. And the great thing about that is it will have the frequently asked questions, and sometimes not even the not so frequently asked ones,
yeah,
about installation, activation, how to use the phone, you know, things that device-specific issues, known issues that we're working on and will be fixed in the next release or in future release. And then something that's really important is the device descriptions. We often get questions like that from new users where
I was going to ask you because, you know, I've done one for the Blackjack too because that's the only one I own.
Yes,
but we do have
exactly.
a lot of other.
We received your device description, and we'll be we'll be writing to people as well who've done the same and asking their permission to put it up in the knowledge base, and that's going to be available there for everybody.
Good,
so
good.
Again, this isn't our way of saying to people, okay, just refer to our knowledge base and that's it. No, the reason why we're having this KB, this knowledge base, is so that people can refer to it, the users, also the dealers, so that you know people they could answer some of the questions. Because this knowledge base isn't just modules grouping the different questions. It also has a search
you
function.
Can kill it, yeah.
So
yeah.
You can type in the different terms. Let's say activation problem. Samsung Blackjack 2, for example, and it will come up with matching results to help you troubleshoot the problem. I can go on about different plans that we have for support. I understand the concern that people have. We understand that, and we're actually working on so many support tools that we hope would help help people in the future as well. To improve the support that they're getting, especially post-sale support, as well as enable our distributors to provide that support when they are contacted by the people they sold the product to.
That's good. Because mm-hmm. I like the answer. I appreciate what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. And feel free to express these concerns to us as well. Just write to us, call us up, and tell us what you think will be the other things that we should do in order to provide better support. As I said, that's a major priority in Code Factory.
You know, I'm sitting here smiling because I'm thinking, I'm sure some of us have, and you didn't reply. No, I'm kidding. So when you said that, I thought,
even if you post it on the mailing list, we monitor the mailing list regularly, so we also see that.
That's good. Which takes me to one of my last questions for you today. What is it with the Code Factory blog? Now, I haven't been to it in a while, but is anybody using it? And what was the purpose for that? I remember you made an announcement. I think I saw two posts, and I think that's been about it. So, I mean, what...
Yeah, that's true, because so far the blog has been used to post about Code Factory events. But what it's really meant for is to, again, increase that sense of community among users. We are currently collecting articles that we will be posting from dealers, partners, and we're also inviting people, starting with testers and then, you know, as well as customers, to just contribute articles about anything that relates to the product and the phones that they're using. It could be a post about how to use MobileSpeak smartphone with this third-party application that they think is really great and useful, you know, and then just send it to us. What we're doing is we're collecting, and then we'll be posting them in a series with a certain theme. So, you know, let's say it's about digital book reading, accessing electronic book websites.
Oh yeah, right. E-books, you know, sources, and things like that. Yeah,
and we'll have that, and then we'll also have a series about, you know, GPS, et cetera. So, you know, that's the main purpose of the blog. It will be another source of information and another way for users to communicate and share their experience. We're actually always keeping an eye out for requested features as well as requests for support of third-party applications. For the past year, it's been GPS navigation as well as digital book reading.
Agreed,
and so you'll notice that from the start of this year and probably till the end, you'll be hearing more about, you know, us supporting e-book reading applications, audiobook players, Daisy players. You know, even another top request is Bible reading applications.
That's right. That's been real popular. You're absolutely right.
So that's going to, and what we do in this case is we look into the third party applications that are available, what already works well, fairly well with our screen readers, and then work on improving the support, and then we announce official support for that. So the application that you mentioned, you know, even if it's not completely under, let's say, GPS navigation or digital book reading, you know, because it already works well with MSS, we will either like look at it and see if there's any work that needs to be done, and then say it's officially supported, or just, you know, list it. And we have a page for each of our screen readers listing the third-party applications that works well with it.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So you can at least link to all the ones that people like me find and other people find that work well. You know, like that, like even the recent one we did with the radio station, which is very popular. You know, so now it's great. I don't have to carry my radio, my, you know, little Walkman with me. I just have it on my phone. So I just love my phone. I just love this stuff. Roselle, you're absolutely delightful. I've really enjoyed this. Now, I want to make sure I get the contact information for everybody. So the main website for Code Factory is www.codefactory.es.
Too many W's.
I know. www. Just go, just infinite, and, you know, item for item. And then you said there's a new email address that you're setting up or have set up?
Have set up. It's already working. You
and
can send
that is support@gmail for Google Mail.
support.codefactory@gmail.com.
Got it. support.codefactory@gmail.com. That's great. Mm-hmm. And then if somebody wants to contact you personally,
roselle.ambubuyog@codefactory.ess. roselle.ambubuyog@codefactory.es.
I was close.
I'm also checking the support email addresses. That's support@codefactory.es, support.codefactory@gmail.com. And whenever you use our online support request form, that also lands in my inbox.
I think hear my voice. Right. That's great. No, it's Ambubuyog. Ambubuyog? Is that right? Oh,
Ambubuyog.
That's hard. Next time we talk, I'll probably have it right. But it's A-M, B as in boy, U, and then the word by, B-U-Y, and then O-G.
Yeah.
Right? Like original player. I got it. All right. Listen, thank you so very much. We appreciate it. I certainly feel better about the support now that I know what's going on. I know you're out there listening to me.
And thanks for the interview as well. You asked really interesting questions, and I've also seen how helpful you are in the mailing list, and we really appreciate that.
We
hope that more people will be encouraged as well to, you know, do what you do, like explore more of what the application can do. Tell us about their feedback, and feel free to inform us what they think would be the best way to improve it. Even our own services like support, just feel free to tell us what you think.
I'm sure they will, and we'll also work on how to pronounce your last name. Listen, take care, and then until next time, and I will put a contact information and everything we discussed on the post with this podcast.
That's all for this episode of the Candle Shore Podcast. I hope you'll check back soon for the next show. You may subscribe to this podcast and the blog by going to feeds.feedburner.com/Candleshore. For all things Candleshore, point your browser to www.candleshore.com. That's CANDLESHORE.com. And if you'd like to send me an email, I'd love to hear from you. You may do so by sending an email to musicman@candleshore.com. Thanks for listening, and remember to make a joyful noise this week. I'll see you back here soon. Take care. Bye-bye.